Welcome to the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center podcast. Every month, we share at least one new talk on the practice of Zen Buddhism at zmc.org/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you find these talks to be valuable, please consider supporting Yokoji by donating at zmc.org/donate. We rely on your support to continue sharing this life-changing practice. Thank you. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Good morning. We're on the last, hopefully the last of the time being. We touched on a little bit of 15, but let's see. But, you know, just very cursorily, I think I still need to go over it. But I'm going to paraphrase a little bit. I'm going to start on what's my page 81, just a little bit into 15. So he goes, Yakuzen said, what is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West? Master Dajio Basso said, for the time being, I have him raise his eyebrows and blink. For the time being, do not have him raise his eyebrows and blink. For the time being, have him raise his eyebrows and blink is right. For the time being, to have him raise his eyebrows and blink is not right. Hearing these words, Yaoshan, Yakuzan, experienced great enlightenment and said to Basso, when I was studying with Sekito, it was like a mosquito trying to bite an iron bull. What Basso said is not the same as other people's words. The eyebrows and eyes are the mountains and oceans. Because mountains and oceans are eyebrows and eyes, to have him raise his eyebrows is to see the mountains. To have him blink is to understand the oceans. The right answer belongs to him, and he is activated by your having him raise the eyebrows and blink. Not right does not mean not having him raise the eyebrows and blink. Not to have him raise the eyebrows and blink does not mean not right. These are all equally the time being. Mountains are time. Oceans are time. If there were no time, there would be no mountains or oceans. Do not think that mountains and oceans here and now are not time. If time is annihilated, mountains and oceans are annihilated. As time is not annihilated, mountains and oceans are not annihilated. This being so, the morning star appears, and the Tathagata appears, the eye appears, the raising the flower appears. Each is time. If it were not time, it could not be thus. 16. Zen Master Guizhang of Shepro Prefecture is the heir of Shushan, a Dharma descendant of Linji, Rinzai. One day he taught the assembly, for the time being, mind arrives, but words do not. For the time being, words arrive, but mind does not. For the time being, both mind and words arrive. For the time being, neither mind nor words arrive. Both mind and words are the time being. Both arriving and not arriving are the time being. When the moment of arriving has not appeared, the moment of non-arriving is here. Mind is donkey, words are horse. So apparently that means this and that, basically. Mind is donkey, mind is this and that. Having already arrived is words, and not having left is mind. Arriving is not coming. Not arriving is not yet. Okay, 17. The time being is like this. Arriving is overwhelmed by arriving, but not by not arriving. Not arriving is overwhelmed by not arriving, but not by arriving. Mind overwhelms mind and sees mind. Words overwhelm words and see words. Overwhelming and sees overwhelming. Overwhelming is nothing but overwhelming. This is time. As overwhelming is caused by you, there is no overwhelming that is separate from you. Thus, go out and meet someone. Someone meets someone. You meet yourself. Going out meets going out. If these are not the actualization of time, they cannot be thus. 18. Mind is the moment of actualizing the fundamental point. Words are the moment of going beyond, unlocking the barrier. Arriving is the moment of casting off body. Not arriving is the moment of being one with just this. While being free from just this, in this way you must endeavor to actualize the time being. 19. The old masters have thus uttered these words, but there is nothing further to say. That's a question, but is there nothing further to say? Mind and words arriving partway are time being. Mind and words arriving, not arriving partway are time being. In this manner, you should examine the time being. To have him raise his eyebrows and blink is half the time being. To have him raise his eyebrows and blink is the time being missed. Not to have him raise the eyebrows and blink is half the time being. Not to have him raise the eyebrows and blink is the time being missed. Thus, to study thoroughly, coming and going, and to study thoroughly, arriving and not arriving, is the time being of this moment. Written on the first day of winter, first year of Ninji, 1240. This is written at Kosho Hurin Monastery. Okay, so, I don't know. It's very involved, this this writing. And this is why it's been classified in this translation as a philosophical work. You know, I don't know if any of you are interested in philosophy, but read some Heidegger, and he's like Dogen, you know, but he's German, I think. Okay, so, all right, for the time, so this is 15, we'll start off with. And so what I put down as my key for this, raising the eyebrows is all-inclusive time being. So, this is interesting because Dogen's using this basic question that is used throughout most of the Zen koan system, which is what is the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West? Now, this really meant something for Master Yakuzan when he was practicing. He became a fine teacher later on. And so to this question, he says, for the time being, have him raise his eyebrows and wink. Now, he doesn't leave it there. He goes, for the time being, do not have him raise his eyebrows and wink, blink. And then he doesn't leave it there. He goes, for the time being, have him raise his eyebrows and blink is right. For the time being, not to have him raise his eyebrows and blink is not right. So, it seems a little esoteric in a certain way, but I remember when I was exploring Christianity, even though I've been raised in it, we used to have this translation of the Bible called, I think it was the New Testament, called Good News for Modern Man, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the translation was, you know, it was very pertinent to the time of the 60s, etc. And I remember the Jesus freaks at that time had this thing about the living Christ, you know, and in many ways that's a very true thing. Is we talk about Buddhism in the same way, you know, it's got to be living now. It's not a matter of nostalgia, looking back at Shakyamuni Buddha 2,400 years ago, or Christ 2,000 years ago. You know, the thing is that those things that we deeply value, you know, that aspect of the divine or the ungraspable is deeply in us all the time. And yet we look for something else in one way. We basically don't own our own divinity in Christianity, or that ungraspable aspect, which is the Buddha mind in itself, right from the beginning. Now here, Basso has got the presence of mind to see that this is the question that is coming up for Yakuzan. And he says, for the time being, I have him raise his eyebrows and blink. And he's talking about, why did Bodhidharma come from the West? So that's something imminent, you know, for the time being, or this being time, I have him raise his eyebrows and blink. Immediately then the mind goes to, well, that's what's happening with me at this moment in time. So he's trying to get him to own it. You know, can you really own this? Now this is kind of interesting, because you know, when I first started practicing, I remember I would get fascinated by the autonomic aspects of the human body. You know, it's just like you're sitting, you got your tongue up against the upper palate of your mouth. And it's meant to inhibit salivation. But then you listen to people around, they will get somewhat self-conscious about it, and they'll start to be gulping and et cetera, and swallowing, you know, and swallowing spit and stuff. And then also with the, you know, like blinking in itself, is that I would sit and I would get fascinated by that fact. Well, am I blinking enough? You know, it's just like, but the body does it of its own accord. And this is interesting. This Bodhidharma is the one who sees through these eyes, blinks. It's not that you have this dude looking through you in that way, like, you know, quite often I say, the one who sees through these eyes. It's that's the one that you got to see is here 24/7. The one that raises the eyebrows and blinks, one who raises a hand when something's coming for your face. You know, it's not like, oh, I am going to do this. It's just done. It's taken care of in that way. This one who is functioning naturally 24/7. It's just like, you know, Master Rinzai had that statement. You should see this true person of no rank who's coming and going out of the holes in your face. If you haven't seen him yet, look. Or, you know, in this case, feel. It's just Basso's take on this same thing. Sometimes I make him raise his eyes and blink. It's something that's done naturally. Sometimes I don't. You know, sometimes we're aware of it, sometimes we're unaware of it. It doesn't really matter in that way. Sometimes it's right, sometimes it's not right. In those ways. But again, is that Dogen goes into this in detail. You know, just like with the statement is that the eyebrows are the mountains, rivers, the great earth, etc. I'm paraphrasing here and somewhat guessing. The eyebrows and eyes are the mountains and oceans, because mountains and oceans are eyebrows and eyes. To have him raise his eyebrows is to see the mountains. To have him wink is to understand the oceans. I mean, in many ways, you know, like if you get a regular person reading this, is what the hell is he talking about? It's bullshit. You know, because our observation is of something else. But when you look at it, is the eyebrows and the eyes are the mountains and rivers, because that's what is directly seen as the biggest part of our living. It's not I am going through all of these things. It's just that the mountains are here, the oceans here, whatever it is, the people are here. They fill most of our own experience, but then we like to try and distance ourselves from that experience in our own heads. The biggest part of practice is not believing in the story that we tell ourselves. and defining ourselves as those things. So Dogen is almost like he puts a stick in the wheel, you know, the bike's going, and then she's like, oh, stop. Wait a minute. That is the very thing that stops me from really being intimate with my environment. You know, just in the same thing as if we really are involved in something, it's almost like that occupies the whole space that we have. And of course, Yakusan in this way, he's being so direct in that one, being time. You know, raising the eyebrows and blinking. How often are we aware of that? You know? But it's occurring 24/7. The seeing, the hearing, the tasting, the touching, the smelling, and thinking. And yet we think we can attain something else. But Dogen, over and over, you know, it's almost like somebody banging you on the head. Come back. Look at this. Look at what you got. Don't believe the story you're telling yourself. Over and over and over in this way. So, you know, I want to do this justice, but I don't want to also get too involved in this. It's better to, you know, just get some pointers in there and then leave it somewhat opaque, because it's that aspect of koan which is really important. It's very important to not have somebody explain everything for you. You know, it's far better for you to do the explanation to your own one who came from the West, your own Bodhidharma in that way. And that one will become alive and vigorous in terms of your own living through your own experience in that way. So, you know, we've the right and not right is, this is it. This is really important to look at, is it right? Is it not right? Or is it just being time in itself? People will say right or not right, or you're blinking too much, you're winking, you know, etc. Is, but how can you really quantify that? The being in itself is that way. And as we know, you know, sometimes we blink more, especially, you know, if there's like a gas in the air or smoke, we blink more. Sometimes if it's very humid, we blink far less. It's not right or not right. The important thing is that direct experience. So, and then he goes on, mountains are time, oceans are time. If there were not time, there would be no mountains or oceans. It's like when you go to sleep at night, there's nothing. It's fine, no problem. There's no time being at that point, except there is the absorption in no thing or sleep at that way. Realization can also be this way, where everything is wiped out for a period of time, and then that direct experience of being mountains, rivers, oceans comes back in. Being our problems, being everything that is here right now is there. So we are never out of time in that way. Being and time are obviously one and the same thing. And we go on as we move on. So he goes on, this being so, the morning star appears. So out of being time, the Tathagata, or the one who sees through these eyes, the one that Shakyamuni Buddha talks about, since beginningless time, Tathagata, I have appeared as thus, in order to save all beings. And then, you know, he goes in, but because of our upside down views, we fail to see it. Those words in themselves are the very thing that are the key of Buddhism. That's the koan of Buddhism right from the beginning. The practice is the being time, or being the Tathagata. Being part of this continuum, basically, that people have looked into this great matter for thousands of years. You know, we don't know when this began. My Zimi Roshi would say, you know, the first one probably was like an ape man. You know, I think probably was a fish or an amoeba in that one. The struggle to be a one with oneself has been going on for however, you know, however long. We can't really say. And neither does it end here. That's one of the beauties of Buddhism. That goes on. That method, that insight in itself, that being Bodhidharma, Dogen, continues right down to the present moment and beyond that, through the people that choose to take that great quest on. I mean, right, it's kind of interesting right now is at UCLA, they're doing a Zoom series on the great matter. You know, so this was the same as with Maizumi Roshi. It is the same as with Bayan Hakujin, Maizumi Roshi's father, all the way through history, right back to the beginning. This quest is equally valid today as it was thousands of years ago. And we are in that. It's important we don't demean who we are as human beings. And so it goes on, the eye appears, the raising of the flower appears. Again, this was the transmission, so he's gone through from the Buddha's realization to him transmitting that to Mahakasyapa. It's all being time. And then, if it were not time, it could not be thus. But now he's going to, it could not be now, it could not be thus. So now we move on. We go to 16. And my key was four types of accord in time being. That's my key to it. Now this is kind of interesting because this guy is of the Rinzai school, and he's using something that basically is a play on a system of training that Master Rinzai said. So what he says here is for the time being. Mind arrives, but words do not. So you have the experience, you can't say anything about it. For the time being, words arrive, but mind does not. You can say all kinds of things about it, but the experience isn't there. For the time being, both mind and words arrive. Great. Usually no problem if you're in accord with what goes on. And for the time being, neither mind all words are right. Sometimes, and this is not so bad, you know, in this way, is that what can you say about it? You're in the midst of something, you're absorbed in it. You can't say anything about it, you're in it. Now, if we go back then to what Rinzai would use, and this was also like, it was known as the four positions of I think it was host and guest or something like that. It's a very similar thing. Master Rinzai would say, and this was a teaching technique, he would say, sometimes I take away the person, but I don't take away the environment. So if someone's very self-centered, you really attack that part till there's nothing to stand on. There's the environment. They really absorb themselves in that. And sometimes I take away the environment and not the person. If somebody is leaning more to that, but they really don't have a developed sense of self, bring that up. Okay, then he goes, then sometimes they take them away, the man or the person and the environment. So he wipes everything clear so that the person can really be free. And then the fourth one, sometimes I do neither. I don't take away the person. I don't take away the environment. And again, these are positions that we take as human beings. It's important to be able to see these things, and then you can understand where somebody is coming from. It's a very simplistic thing. It's a bit like the five ranks, but it's a bit shorter. So we go on. Both mind and words are being time, as we know. You know, just like it is a beautiful day today, it's clear. Mind and words are in accord. Then it goes, both arriving and non-arriving are the time being. So whether you think you've arrived or you've not arrived, it's still the time being. It doesn't matter. When the moment of arriving has not appeared, the moment of not arriving is here. So if I'm on a journey and I've not arrived, then I've not arrived, period. You know, a lot of this seems to be very simplistic, but it's important to also say it and put things out in this way. When the moment of arrival, just a minute, let's see, When the moment of arriving has not appeared, the moment of not arriving is here, obvious. And then he goes, where he says, mind is donkey, words are a horse, he's basically saying, mind is this and that. You know, a donkey and horse are the similar, but they're different. So we've always got stuff like that in our lives. It's not a matter of one's faster or slower. It's just this and that fills our lives. None of them have greater importance than other parts of our lives, except in our own minds. This moment in time, this time being, is most important. Having already arrived is words, and not having left is mind. Arriving is not coming. Not arriving is not yet. So it is exactly as is now. Having already arrived is words. Not having left is mind. And is that aspect is that this being time is basically the only being time that we've ever had ever since we were little kids. So one of the biggest realizations you can have is just, why am I doing all this maneuvering? It's always been like this, whether I have, whether I haven't, whether words come, whether they don't come. This is it. It can't be another way because it isn't in that respect. How are we doing? I'm going to finish. Okay, 17. Okay, so my key to this, this moment overwhelms criteria. So that's what I would say is my capping phrase for this. The time being is like this. Now, this is interesting. The word like in Japanese is a very important word. It doesn't mean it exactly is. It means it is like this. Like, you know, and it's like all of our lives is, it's like this. It doesn't mean it is and it should be. It's just like this. And if you see that like aspect and see that it's a very open word and it fits to wherever you are, that really helps in terms of living. Practice is like this. It doesn't mean it only occurs in this place. It means that wherever you are, practice is like this, but it shouldn't look like something. It is just like this. So then he goes, arriving is overwhelmed. And that's a very interesting use of words, overwhelmed. And I'm going, well, why is he using overwhelmed? I mean, quite often I think of overwhelmed as like non-functional. You know, he's like, I'm overwhelmed, I can't do anything. But there's that thing about being overwhelmed. It fills the whole space. It's overwhelmed by arriving. I mean, sometimes, as you know, I've been to places or to see people, and I'm overwhelmed by that. You know, here I am at Aheiji. Here I am at my hometown. Here I am at so-and-so's place meeting somebody. I'm overwhelmed by it. I'm overwhelmed by the task that needs to be done. It fills the whole space. And in many ways, it's a very wonderful word in that way. But, you know, most of the time, I don't want to be overwhelmed by things, you know. It's like, oh, you're in a scary place. It's like, you're overwhelmed by it. It fills the space. But as we know, that's a very beautiful thing because then it doesn't mean you have to see the whole thing. It's that you just take care of this, you know, time by time. Not arriving is overwhelmed by not arriving. In other words, if you haven't arrived, that is exactly what your life is. But not by arriving, because you're not there yet. Mind overwhelms mind and sees mind. So sometimes there is just mind. It's not that I am observing something else. Again, this is a criticism of this objective kind of practice, which is you are seeing something or attaining something. It's not about that. You are overwhelmed by whatever it is, whatever mind is. And again, mind isn't just the thinking mind. It's subject, object, and the process. So that includes everything. You're overwhelmed by whatever that process is. Words overwhelm words and see words. Well, do you agree with that one? Words overwhelm words and see words. Have you ever struggled to find the words? You know? And yet, those words are enough. They can't be any other way. And then overwhelming overwhelms overwhelming and sees overwhelming. You know, I mean, that's a very complex. I mean, he's mentioning 1, 2, 3, 4 overwhelms in one sentence. Quite often in Chinese and Japanese, they compound words to really strengthen the words. You know, outside, inside. You're overwhelmed. That's the only experience that is experienced. It's really interesting in that way. If you say, well, I'm overwhelmed, then quite often there is non-overwhelming going on at the same time. But this is it occupying everything now. You know, overwhelming also has the aspect of awe in it too. In a true sense, not awesome. You know, it just is amazing. And then he sort of goes on. So as overwhelming is caused by you, there is no overwhelming that is separate from you. I think that's true. I think that's really true. You know, overwhelming doesn't exist out there. It's that when I am in it, that exactly what is going on. There is no overwhelming that's separate from you. Thus, you go out and meet someone. Someone meets someone. You meet yourself. Going out meets going out. If these are not actualizations of time, they cannot be thus. It's just one of those things is that, you know, with practice is that those barriers between self and other and you know, begin to erode. You know, when I meet someone, they're like me. Like me doesn't mean they are. Again, is that nice word, like. They're like me. They have a lot of differences. That's where there's not so much difference between male and female, young and old in that way. A being meets a being. You know, we're so attached to definitions and role that which is beyond role, the one who sees through these eyes, hears through these ears, that's what we meet. That is where the true connection is. That's why Buddhism really has that aspect going for it of that vast and empty. If you see that part, it's applicable to everything because that's the very bonding that we have as human beings. But it's not a thing either. We feel, we experience that in our own being time. And again, as if these are not the actualizations of time, they cannot be thus. It's pretty obvious. Okay, so 18. Actualizing this, communicating this, and dropping being time. So now he begins to sort of come out of this whole thing, these 17 previous paragraphs, and he starts going, mind is the moment of actualizing the fundamental point. So now, as I said at the beginning of this Uji series, is that he's going back to he wanted to call every single fascicle Genjo Koan Uji, basically, or actualizing the fundamental point of Uji. And this is what practice is actualizing this fundamental point. We go back to the actual fascicle, actualizing the fundamental point. Because when you find the place that you stand, practice occurs. This is being time in itself. Words, so we go, mind is the moment of actualizing the fundamental point. Words are the moment of going beyond and locking the barrier. Now, a lot of people underestimate the power of words. You just think, well, I have the experience of it. I met thousands of people that have had that. But the one of the biggest part is, how do you convey that? That's what the whole transmission is. How do you convey that to somebody else? How do you help them in whatever way? You know, help might be a bit grandiose, but how do you reach people? I mean, for me, I've been turned around by words, you know, in positive and negative ways. You know, now I want to sort of tell you a story too. There was a great master who's a contemporary of, you know, say, was it like Eisenhower and all those guys, only in the Japanese Zen tradition. And at the end of World War II, the Prime Minister was really having a hard time. You know, how can we surrender? We can't. It's not in the Japanese DNA. It's not in the Bushido way. How do we convey this? So he went to see Yamamoto Genpo Roshi, who was like Dharma uncle of Koryu Roshi. And he asked him about it. And Yamamoto Genpo Roshi said to him, "You've got to tell the nation that they have got to accept the unacceptable, you know, and let the emperor be like the sun, basically untouchable in that way." And he managed to give him the words that enabled the Japanese to surrender. Now, if they hadn't, there would have been millions of people that were killed. You know, these words happened to be able to change a whole nation of, you know, I don't know what the population was then, you know, 50, 60 million maybe. And yet we underestimate those words. And the words that we have heard through our own cultural lore that have come down to us, that have helped us to be human beings that are considerate and caring for the people around us. All of those words that are there. And yet people push these words aside and go, "You're just trying to get me to look at something I don't want to see," or whatever, rather than going, "Well, this is interesting. This is inquiry. How do I really express this in a way that somebody can take it?" I mean, you look at Shakyamuni himself, as he spent 40 years trying to communicate that to people. And when he first started on that, he didn't think people could understand it. But it was just, you know, his sort of higher self or Indra or Brahma came down and said, "Sure, you can try it." And so he spent all of those years doing it. What a better way of living than to try and communicate that, you know, those words. And one word can really turn somebody around in one way or another. And those words can be like, raising the eyebrows and blinking. It can be natural. People say to me, you know, "You said this to me a few years ago. Now I really understand it." I go, "Did I? I have no idea." I have no idea whatsoever. And maybe that's the best teaching, because the non-contrived ones are the ones that match the circumstance. You know? So, and that's the aspect of unlocking the barrier. Each one of us has a barrier. "I cannot realize this because." Once the story's thrown away and you approach and you do the best you possibly can, then maybe the words, the things that stimulate you, will take you through that barrier and beyond that. And then, so he goes on, "Arriving is the present of casting off the body. Not arriving is the moment of being one with just this." Makes sense? "Well, being free from just this, in this way you must endeavor to actualize the time being." You know, endeavor. Try. You know, endeavor's a big word. Try in whatever way. Because if you don't, then usually nothing is actualized. So it's important to do it. And in time, that endeavor will be time being in itself. It's not the great endeavor of life and death. It is this living at this moment in time. And you just do and take the next step that is necessary. Okay, 19. Study thoroughly. Don't be turned around by with words. So now he's just coming back. He's letting go of the whole thing. The old masters have uttered these words, but there is nothing further to say. Is there nothing further to say? He's left that to us. Well, as we all know, is that there's always more to say in that way. There always. Mind and words arriving is partway a time being. Mind and words not arriving partway are the time being. Okay, throw it away. You know, this is the time being. Whether it's complete or not complete, whether your words have reached or not reached, it's still the time being. Whether you're left with a sense of incompleteness, it's still the time being. You know, don't avoid these things that help us to move as human beings. In this manner, you should examine the time being. To have him raise the eyebrows and blink is half the time being. To have him raise the eyebrows and blink is the time being missed. Is that true or not? I mean, I can't really say much about that. Is it missed? Do we really ever miss anything, or is it exactly what it is? Okay, so he goes on. But thus, to study thoroughly coming and going, and to study thoroughly arriving and not arriving, is the time being of this moment. Is that true? Yeah. Okay. Well, I did it. I did it. Thank you. Thank you. So now we'll open it for any questions.
I do a couple. You are now able to use the raise hand function and unmute yourself if you have any questions.
Jindo, did you have your hand up? It was up temporarily.
He was doing the clapping.
Oh, clapping. Okay. Clap. So that's one hand, huh? Yeah. So I want to hear the sound of one hand now.
The sound of one hand,
right. Come on. All right, there's nobody. All right, we're done. Good. Yeah. Oh, Jindo. Okay. There you go. The sound of one hand. Thank you.
Let me just see here.
All right. Olsen's dog. Carry on. You're on.
Oops. Excuse me. You're barking in the background. Yeah,
stop it. Stop it, Olsen.
I was struck by, we started this and here we are doing Dogen again. And Dogen for me is usually really impenetrable. But for some reason today, your explanations all made so much sense to me.
Yeah, pity.
The words got through. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, all right.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about just times when words really have an impact, times when they don't.
Yeah.
And
right.
I was reminded of a time a long time ago when I was talking to a friend of mine on the phone, and he was telling me about all these problems in his life and his relationships. And I just said, the main problem, man, is you do cocaine all the time. And
probably
the amazing
true.
Thing is, well, the amazing thing is he heard it.
Yeah.
And he stopped and he's never done it since. And it's been over 30 years. And every once in a while, he, on the anniversary of that day, he sends me an email and said, I'm just celebrating the anniversary.
Yeah. Yeah.
What he said to me. And I just thought of that because you were talking about sometimes the words come. And the meaning isn't there sometimes. The meaning comes, the experience, the words aren't there.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah, you know, there's a really nice story of Rio Khan, you know, and he's meant to be a, you know, I mean, obviously he's a great poet, so he probably could use words well. But he was asked by his brother to come and counsel his nephew, because his nephew was turned into a drunkard, you know, and he tried to talk with him and he couldn't, and he spent a whole week there trying to, you know, set up times where he could listen, etc. And he just wasn't getting through. And then at the end of this week, Rio Khan came to the front door, and he was about to leave, and he asked his nephew to fasten his shoes, which was a traditional Japanese thing, apparently. And he puts his traveling sandals on and he ties them, and as he's doing that, a tear drops from Rio Khan's eye, and it falls on his nephew's cheek. And with that one tear, which is not a word, all of those other words hadn't really reached him, you know, is that he realized how much his uncle cared about him. You know, so we don't know when these things are going to come about, and you can't contrive that kind of teaching. Mm-hmm. Well, and then apparently then he gave up the demon drink, you know, at that point.
Thank you.
You.
I'm looking for real life hands.
Yeah, real life hands, okay. Can you close that door a minute?
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting cold for some reason. Oh.
Hmm? Kyle, let's go.
Yeah, Kyle. Okay. You're on.
Good afternoon, everybody. I am thinking about or sort of feeling a sense of when words, you try and they just fall short, and this sense of intuiting when to stop talking,
yeah.
Or the sense of what, you know, using words but listening at the same time, sort of having words be something that is not just about putting something outward, but also, you know, receiving words in the same and having that happen simultaneously. You know, which, you know, I this feels like a bit, I don't have a real anecdotal reference for this, but my sense is just a number of experiences of, you know, trying to find and craft the perfect words for something, or to, you know, just really continually put effort on the out. And then realizing that, you know, words are meant to... realizing first that it's not working, and then opening up to, you know, words are not meant to be one directional, you know.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, so that
I think that door might be open. Can you check it? Yeah, no, it's that word communication. You know, I mean, which, you know, English is very, very accurate. Come into one, come yun, and the vehicle of doing that, and part of it is that. Is feeling that other person and their whole energy. You know, it's not just listening to the words, it's seeing where they're coming from in that way and seeing what can be said in a way that again can be taken by the other person. And so seeing how they use language and trying to talk in accord with that.
In the word overwhelm comes to mind. It's to that word. It's like be overwhelmed by that exchange, you know, just like the complete sort of immersion to where, you know, it's not even, I can catch myself so many times sort of thinking through, an exchange as it's happening, and it's like, no, you know, that.
Yeah.
That's, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, it's live in that respect, yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Right, Shiro, you're on.
Just following what Kyle was saying, when we were on the overwhelm thing, I went down the rabbit hole of the notations in this book, you know?
Yeah.
And then you go to the glossary. And it's interesting because in the glossary of this book, overwhelm leads you to hindrance, which then leads to, it says in Dogen's usage, being completely covered or one with reality.
Yeah.
Which is just an interesting.
And that's the way I was using it too, you know? And also coming from my own experience of being overwhelmed, because it's not, you know, in essence, it is usually those things are, they fill the space. You know, that's how I experience it, you know.
Yeah, because often we give it a pejorative quality.
Yeah, exactly.
But then overwhelmed by the beauty, we will turn it the other way.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. And then, I just want to, well, not to be too kind, but wow, what a journey taking us through this. So I, you know, thank you for that.
Yeah.
But then I just kind of went backwards. And like after all of these days and of you doing this and kind of the overwhelm of it, I went back to the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And where it says, for the time being, stand on top of the
highest. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it just had a completely different quality.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, you know, please don't think that mine's a definitive, one wouldn't call it dissertation or interpretation, you know, of it. That's just the way I see it at this time, and that's, you know, one of the things with Dogen's writing is layered.
Yeah,
you know, it needs more time to sort of unpack it in many ways, but it's far better if the individual does that. From my perspective,
yeah, and just the overwhelm of this text and Dogen and our spending time with it, and just for what it's worth, my experience now of going back to the beginning is like,
yeah, good.
Oh, you know, oh.
Yeah, and that's where it's more important is when you do it for yourself in that respect. Because for me, it always shows aspects of my own life that haven't been unpacked yet, you know, in that respect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Thank you. Yeah. All right, Rich, you're on. And after you, Sheila.
Hi, Roger. Good to see you again.
You too.
Yeah. And thank you for this. When I logged in, I'm actually busy right now, but something came up, so I was free to watch it. And I logged in to watch you do this, and I saw you were doing Dogen's Ujin Being Time. And I'm like, oh no, you know, I've always considered it something that.
Yeah, well, that's what I felt about it too.
Yeah. like having to read the Constitution for seventh grade or something, and so. Oh. How am I going to do this? And then, you know, he just went right into talking about raising the eyebrows and blinking, and it's like, no. Right. And but thank you, because, you know, you even said that you shouldn't expect us to read your explanations, or you shouldn't explain to us. But actually, you know, when you talk about raising the eyebrows, nothing but this.
Yeah.
It's happening all the time.
Yeah.
You know.
And we pay no heed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, throwing ourselves into 100%. Getting overwhelmed, absorbed by the. So yeah, it's actually I appreciate this. I'm gonna pick it up and read it again. I'm gonna not today. I'll get some coffee for it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm the same way. Not really, today. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A really naughty. What would you say? Knotty, naughty. Text to read. So thank you. Actually, I appreciate it.
At
first, I was like, oh no, how did I get into this? But you know, at the end of it, I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good, me too. Yeah, I did it. Yay. Yeah.
True.
All right. Thanks, Rich. Right, Sheila, you're on.
Thank you, Roshi. I'm just kind of When I get overwhelmed, when I feel overwhelmed, I can never find the words.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel I should be able to find the words, so I'm never kind of comfortable with being overwhelmed.
No, it's not that comfortable.
Because I can't find the words. Because I can't find the words.
Yeah, well, what about I'm overwhelmed? And then people are going to interpret it in whatever way they interpret it, you know. No, she can't be as overwhelmed as I'm overwhelmed when I'm overwhelmed, you know, stuff like that. No, it's that your overwhelming is completely yours. And it cannot be compared with anybody else's overwhelm.
No, I know I'm overwhelmed, and I want to be able to communicate.
Yeah.
What it is that's happening.
Yeah.
It is so overwhelming, and
yeah.
I can't find the
word. Yeah, for me, it's depth, usually. It's that, something really strikes at a depth that is hard to talk about. For me, when I go through overwhelming, whether it's positive or negative, you know, it's just, it fills a whole space.
Mm.
Yeah. And just try, you know, start, and sometimes the words come out.
Yeah, words come out, and I think that wasn't sufficient.
Yeah,
I'm not happy with the words that come out.
Yeah, but then, you know, I mean, Dogen's saying about talking about that too, is that when it only feels part the way there, that's exactly what your time being is at that particular time. And it's also important at that point is just to think, well, you know, maybe next time I'll try and do it in a different way. And then that always then develops a flexibility within things that overwhelm us, whether they're positive or negative, or they stretch us, you know.
Yeah, okay,
great. Thanks. Good being human. Yeah. Okay.
Alston
again? Okay, sure.
I just remembered something else.
Oh, good.
Thinking about words. Just doing Sesshin, after a while, I realized that the Friday talk was always better than the Tuesday talk.
Yeah. Because it's Friday.
Well, partly Friday. But the other thing is that I'd done 3 days of Zazen in between Tuesday and Friday.
Yeah.
It was like...
Yeah, I mean, obviously...
Broadcasting.
I mean, there is that. It's like my Zumi Roshi would say, you know, Friday or Saturday, I could talk about anything. You'd say. Yeah.
Yeah, I was hearing...
That's a koan in itself, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is that thing is that it's like, you know, I've heard many people say it in various ways, like, you know, like Akiba Roshi would say, by the end of the week, you look a lot more beautiful. But, I don't know if that's really true. I think he's seeing that the beauty that each person is at that point, you know, is that people tend to open up and you know, there is that aspect of living when we simplify life. We don't get involved in all the complex stuff, and we give ourselves that gift of just having it be simple for a period of time. Then that helps us to deal with all the complexities when we get back into our work world or our family world, whatever. In that respect, helps us to also appreciate that too.
Yes, thank you for these talks.
No, thanks. You know, it was something, it was a bit of a challenge for me because Dogen really, you know, he's dense and he speaks on levels too in that respect. I know for myself in studying Master Dogen is that his words always match where I'm at. Through whether I'm a beginner or an old timer, or I'm looking at something afresh, is that something always comes out of that, and For me, he probably is the most eloquent and also to a certain degree concise of people that express the Dharma in that way. And, you know, he can talk from all these different levels in that respect.